Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of KHOI Community Radio's Capital Week. You're listening Post for Politics, Iowa style, where we explore and analyze who's been making news in and around the state capital, what that news is, and what it all means. We are so glad you are with us. I'm Dennis Hart, joined as always by my partner in politics, Laura Bellin. Welcome back, Laura.
Good to be here, Dennis.
With the midterm election behind us in Iowa, we are devoting tonight's program to a discussion of what in the world happened last week and why it happened. What we do know, Laura, is it was a red wave in Iowa. Republicans making big, big games up and down the ticket. Let's start out by briefly going over results from the major races, starting with the U.S. Senate, where Chuck Grassley, 89 years old, incumbent seeking his eighth term, he won it 56-44%, and he won almost every county in Iowa.
Yes, he won all but five counties. The Des Moines Register's poll by Ann Seltzer was right on the money, saying that Chuck Grassley was about 12 points ahead, and that was his winning margin. It was, I will say, not Grassley's most impressive reelection win. He has always won by more than 20 points in the past and often won by more than 30 points. And the Des Moines Register pointed out that the five counties that Mike Franken carried were more than all of Grassley's previous challengers had carried combined.
How much impact do you think, and is it possible to know, but you've analyzed Iowa politics for years, how much impact did the controversy that Mr. Franken ran into about the alleged inappropriate kiss involving a former staff member cost him, or did it cost him?
I don't really think so. It's hard to say because the Des Moines Register didn't do a poll in September. Some years they've done a poll in September and one in October and one right before the election. And this year they didn't do the September poll. So we didn't have a snapshot of the race in between June and October, but I don't think it really affected it. I think the fundamentals were, as other analysis showed, that there was a lot of concern about Chuck Grassley's age, and that is the main reason why his winning margin was so much less, and in fact, even less than the governor's margin.
Now let's talk about the four congressional districts, and it was just disaster after disaster for Democrats on election night. In the first district in southeast Iowa, Republican incumbent Marionette Miller-Meeks, seeking her second term, she won it 53-47% over her Democratic opponent, Christina Bohanna.
Yes, and a big problem for Democrats in northeast and southeast Iowa. This is the district that's in southeast Iowa. And it used to be that there were quite a few pretty decent vote-producing counties for Democrats down there. In this race, Christina Bohannon, Kerry Johnson County, that's where Iowa City is, and that's it. The number of counties along the Mississippi River containing the cities of Muscatine, Burlington, Clinton, the Quad Cities area, Lee County, where Keokuk is, all of those used to be Democratic-leaning counties, and all of them were carried handily by Marionette Miller-Meeks.
Des Moines Register pointed that out as well, and the question is, what in the world has happened to Democrats along the Mississippi, in your opinion?
Well, I don't think it's just along the Mississippi. It's really all of the counties that have small towns and what I call mid-sized cities, what some people call micropolitan areas. These are areas with towns between 10,000 and 40,000 population. And Democrats have been losing ground in that kind of community all over the country, and especially in the upper Midwest. And Iowa just happens to have quite a lot of these communities. And in this district, also now Warren County, which is where Indianola is, that also joined. That's a county that used to be swingy, but the Democrats often did pretty well in Indianola, not this year. So the towns like Burlington, Keokuk, Muscatine, Clinton, those used to be pretty good vote producing areas for Democrats, and it's just not happening.
Second congressional district, if I can get that out on this Monday night, that is in the northeastern part of the state. It used to be the first congressional district, but they reversed in the census in the redistricting. Republican Ashley Hinson, she was the incumbent seeking her second term, former TV journalist, facing Liz Mathis, state senator, also former TV journalist, as we pointed out many times, both on KCRG-TV. In this case, Ashley Hinson won 54-46%.
And this one was troubling for Democrats in a number of ways. I mean, of course, first of all, there's the overall margin, that the a margin of more than 25,000 votes. But Northeast Iowa, again, used to have a fair number of solid Democratic counties. The only two counties in this district that Liz Mathis carried were Linn County, that's Cedar Rapids area, and Blackhawk County, that's Waterloo, Cedar Falls. And the margin was pretty close in Blackhawk County. But a big red flashing sign for Iowa Democrats is that Dubuque County went for Ashley Hinson by more than about, well, close to 3,000 votes. And Dubuque County was so solidly Democratic. It had, until it voted for Donald Trump in 2016, it had not voted for a Republican since Dwight Eisenhower. And now Republicans are steadily improving their performance. And for this kind of a district to become competitive for Democrats, they're just going to have to be able to do better in places like Waterloo and Dubuque.
A really big loss for Democrats last Tuesday night was in Congressional District number 3. This is where they had an incumbent, Cindy Axne, Democratic incumbent, seeking her second term against Republican Zach Nunn. It was close, a couple of thousand votes, but Zach Nunn prevailed 50.3% to 49.7%. One of those districts that a lot of money and attention had been put into by both parties. And if the Republicans do win the House, and it's still very much up for grabs, this is going to be one of the races they point to.
Oh, definitely. I mean, when the margin is going to be so close, probably only a 2 or 3 seat majority, it's looking like. And so every seat matters. It was typical in the sense that for Cindy Axne's victories that she carried Polk County, she lost the other counties in the district. Her mission was to run up the score in Polk County, keep it close in Dallas County. That's by far the second largest, and then not get blown out everywhere else. And interestingly, she didn't do badly in the rural counties compared. I was comparing her votes to 2018, which was the first race she won against David Young, and she didn't do too badly. But the big difference was in Polk County, where her margin of about just under 27,000 votes, whereas in 2018, she had a margin of 33,000 votes. So obviously a better, when you lose the entire district by only a couple thousand votes, it was very costly not to have a better showing in Polk County. And Zach Nunn is fairly established in Polk County. He's been a state legislator for the last 8 years, but I suspect that probably Democratic turnout was a little depressed. One more thing I want to mention, there were no third party candidates on the ballot. Both times that Cindy Axne won her previous races, she won with a little less than 50% of the vote, but there were third-party candidates. And this time she has 49.7% of the vote, but in a two-person race, that's not quite good enough to win.
We had talked as the election approached in the weeks before it on this broadcast that she may have known she was in trouble off the get-go because she started out on television with negative ads, really ripping into Nunn. And often you see incumbents wanting to put out a positive image on themselves, but she started out negative.
Definitely. In the summer, right away, she had a fundraising advantage. And almost as soon as Zach Nunn won the primary, she was out with negative ads trying to define him before he had a chance to define himself. And she did outspend him by quite a bit, but other Republican-aligned outside groups ended up spending almost $5 million against her. So in the end, he had about as much firepower, but most of it wasn't directly controlled by his campaign. But yes, I think that all of the Democrats realized that it was going to be a very difficult election cycle. Things somewhat improved for Democrats after the Supreme Court ruling in June, the Dobbs decision, which overturned Roe v. Wade. And I would guess that the internal polling showed that Cindy Axne's position somewhat improved after that, because that has been the story across most of the country, that that tended to stabilize how the Democratic candidates were doing.
Of course, District 3 is in Des Moines and Polk County, as well as some other areas. District 4, the next one we're going to talk about, in Northwest Iowa, heavily Republican. It includes the community of Ames, of course. Republican Randy Feenstra, the incumbent, seeking his second term, had really a candidate who had no money, no name recognition, and Feenstra just walked away with it easily.
He did. I mean, he won it by even more than what the partisan lean of the district is. All of Iowa's 4 congressional districts lean Republican, but of course, the 4th district is the most solidly Republican, and winning it by almost a 40-point margin, I mean, that just shows the Democratic candidate was underfunded. I forgot to mention in connection with that third district that Cindy Axne, although she lost, she actually outperformed the partisan lean of the district. It's about what they call an R plus three. The district as a whole votes about 3 points more Republican than the country. And Zach Nunn only won by about 0.6%. So Cindy Axne didn't exactly underperform. It's just that she didn't overperform by enough to win. Whereas in the fourth district, you could say that Ryan Melton underperformed, even though it is such a strongly Republican leaning district. He didn't even get to that baseline level that you would expect a generic Democratic candidate to have. And I suspect that when I look at the county level turnout numbers, I'm going to see that the turnout rate for Democrats all across that Northwest Iowa stretch was much lower than in 2018.
Let's talk about some of the statewide races now. The governor, Republican Kim Reynolds, the incumbent seeking her second full term, easily defeated Democrat Deidre Jeer, 58-40%, just about again what the Des Moines Register poll predicted would happen. And in this particular case, as we said all summer long and into the fall, Deidre Jeer had virtually no money compared to Kim Reynolds. A lot of people didn't know her. It was always going to be an uphill battle, and it was just way too uphill.
Yes, when the earliest fundraising reports came out in January covering the fundraising last year, and Deidre Jeer's campaign had almost nothing in the bank, that was hugely alarming to Iowa Democrats, because it was clear that she wasn't on track to be able to run a real statewide campaign with a statewide message. And again, the overall turnout last week in Iowa was a little more than 100,000 down from that 2018 race, when it was so competitive. The governor's race was very close, was decided by about a 3-point margin. But I suspect that when I look at those numbers, that it was that 100,000 turnout drop wasn't evenly spread across Democrats, Republicans, and independents. I suspect that the Democratic turnout was just substantially lower, partly because the Iowa Democratic Party also didn't have as much money to spend on that get out the vote operation that they've done in the past. And I think largely because Deidre Jeer wasn't running any kind of a message across most of the state.
So where does she go from here? She lost 4 years ago for Secretary of State against Paul Paich. She's lost to the governor. What's next?
Well, I don't know. I haven't heard her talk about her plans. I would think that at this point, that running for office, running for statewide office, is probably a non-starter. However, you never know. It's possible that a legislative district in her area could open up at some point. J.D. Scholten, who was an unsuccessful congressional candidate in the last two cycles, was just elected to the Iowa House. And I think it's possible that she may do that, or she may focus on the business arena. She is a small business owner, and she may decide that that is the area where she wants to leave her mark rather than running for office again. I don't know.
Speaking of Paul Paich, the Secretary of State, Republican incumbent, seeking his third consecutive term, and he easily defeated Democrat Joel Miller, the Linn County Auditor. It wasn't close.
No, it really wasn't. And in fact, he won. He even outpulled the governor by a little bit. It's difficult to beat a statewide incumbent. Joel Miller just didn't have any kind of a campaign going, really. He barely won some of the largest population counties, but he just didn't have enough to boost his name ID. And Paul Paich is really active year round, going around the state. He does a lot of local media interviews. He does a lot of local appearances. He gives an award to high schools that have the most percentage of their senior class register to vote when they turn 18. And he just manages to get a lot of publicity. So I wasn't too surprised that he ended up getting 60% of the vote. Joel Miller never really got anything going in that race.
We say it's tough to beat an incumbent, but here we go with a couple of statewide races where incumbents indeed lost. And you and I had said one of those races that we would look at on election night, and if it turned against the incumbent, we'd know there was the red wave building. We said this on the air. This was one of them, the attorney general's race, where Democrat Tom Miller, seeking his 11th term, the longest serving state AG in the nation's history, lost to Republican Brenna Byrd, the county attorney of Guthrie County. She won 51-49%.
Yes, he lost by about 21,000 votes, just under 21,000 votes. And again, the governor won by about 225,000 votes. So Tom Miller actually ended up getting more than 100,000 votes more than Dieter Dejeer. It just wasn't quite enough to overcome that deficit. And as we discussed on past shows, Brenna Byrd vastly outspent the incumbent on TV. She spent at least $1.5 million on TV ads, many of them negative. And I suspect that, again, when I look at the turnout numbers, I think that we're going to see that the drop in turnout of Democrats is on top of the spending. I think that's really going to be what sank Tom Miller, because, again, he only lost by a little less than 21,000 votes in a context where the governor was winning by more than 200,000.
And she will always be remembered, I think, by political watchers, including you and me, for that commercial she put up there, give them the bird, and everybody knew what that meant.
Yes. So it'll be interesting to see what she does. I mean, she said that she's going to sue the Biden administration more, so she'll be joining lawsuits, but that's not really time-consuming work. Mostly other state attorneys general do the legwork, and so citing on Iowa to those lawsuits doesn't take a lot of staff time. So I'm not sure how much she's going to change the other parts of the attorney general's office. They spend a lot of time defending and advising state government agencies, defending state government entities in court. They handle a lot of consumer protection work. So I'll be looking to see how much turnover there is in the agency and how she tries to put her stamp on it.
She has one of those names that, given the bird, actually works. It would never have worked to have a spot that said, give them the bellin or give them the heart. It would not have worked. And we're going to take a break right now. We've got a lot more to talk about. We're on for an hour tonight, by the way. I mean, thank you for asking us here for the hour. I guess the listeners didn't ask for that, did they? All right. Well, they get us anyway. It's 15 after the hour. Wherever you are, we're having a good time. You're in tune with KHOI Radio's Capital Week, your one-stop listening post for everything interesting, important or entertaining about Iowa politics. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bell. Before we go any farther, we want to bring in KHOI station manager, Mr. Mike Murphy, who has some key words about how you can help support this radio station. Mr. Murphy, you have the air.
Well, thank you. This is another fine show, and this is we're very proud of having Capital Week on the air. It helps us in our eternal quest to meet our mission, and this program certainly does it. And there's nothing else like it, as far as we know. I just want to say, you know, these days everyone's talking about renewable resources, and you can think of KHOI as a renewable resource for you and other Central Iowa listeners. Like all renewable resources, KHOI is there for you every day, 365 days a year. And KHOI powers you through your day with great music, local and international news, and intriguing talk shows. And it's a renewable resource that relies on your renewed support to provide the quality programs you've come to trust and love. Just like all renewable resources, except maybe the sun, it takes careful stewardship to keep it going. That's where you come in. A basic KHOI membership is $60 a year. That's just a smidge over 16 cents a day, but we will gladly accept whatever your budget allows. $25? $250? Please pick up the phone right now. Call us at 515-292-2878. And since I'm the only one here physically at the station, you'll have to leave a message. Press 0 for the reception. And then leave a voicemail if no one answers. And if someone answers, or if you leave the voicemail, just tell them, I want to protect my renewable resource. I want to become a member of KHOI. I've been thinking about this for days, and the time has come for me to do my part. Did you get that? Did you get all that? So be sure to leave a message and we'll get back to you, or go to khoifm.org and click on that yellow Become a Member Donor button on the homepage. And since KHOI is a renewable resource that keeps coming back to you each and every day, consider becoming a renewable resource that comes back to KHOI every month. Tell us you want to give your contribution as an automatic withdrawal from your bank account. That way we can depend on a steady source of income and you don't have to think about it. Once again, Call 515-292-2878 or pledge securely online at khoifm.org. Help renew this renewable resource. And thank you. And back to Dennis and Laura.
And thank you, Mike. Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin on Capital Week. We are talking about what happened last week, and we're going to analyze what happened, how it happened, and what it all means. We're going over the treasurer's race now. One of those, again, Laura, that last week we said before the election, if this one is close or if it turns over, it's going to be potentially a red wave. Well, it turned over. Democrat Mike Fitzgerald, seeking his 11th term, longest-serving state treasurer in the U.S., did indeed lose to Robbie Smith, the state Senate member from Davenport, 51-49%.
Yes, and again, Mike Fitzgerald, the long-serving treasurer, he got about 100,000 more votes than Deirdre DeGeer. It just wasn't enough. He didn't spend a lot of money. Tom Miller, although he was outspent in that attorney general's race, he did spend close to $1 million himself. Mike Fitzgerald, just he's never spent a lot of money on his campaigns, and he didn't this year either. He spent less than $100,000 combined on all of his advertising, whereas Robbie Smith was spending several hundred thousand. And I believe also, as I mentioned, that I think that the decline in Democratic turnout probably hurt Mike Fitzgerald. He lost this race overall by about 30,000 votes. I was looking at some of the county totals. Remember what I was saying about those counties with mid-sized cities? And I'm talking about places like Wapello County, where Ottumwa is, Webster County, where Fort Dodge is. And by the way, that's where Mike Fitzgerald is from. He did not carry Webster County. These are areas that for decades were just bedrock Democratic vote producing areas. And they have given many statewide Democratic candidates a cushion in previous races of Marshall County with Marshalltown, Boone County, these places where the Democratic candidates just cannot make up for the deficit they're getting in the deep red rurals. And although Mike Fitzgerald did win some of those larger urban counties, he didn't by the overwhelming margin that he needed to make up that gap.
And Democratic Auditor Rob Sand may be the luckiest Democrat in Iowa. He is, as of now, the only statewide Democrat still standing, although it's still unofficial. Recounts are ongoing, but the Democratic Auditor, Rob Sand, has 50.1% of the vote so far against Republican Todd Helber, who has 49.9%. Helber says he's going to have a statewide recount. We've already had a couple of counties recounted. I'm sure this is a little bit closer than Mr. Sand anticipated.
Well, I mean, a recount, first of all, just to give people some perspective, a recount is not going to change the result. This is more than 2,000 votes, 2,500 votes, basically separating them statewide. The recount that was done in the second congressional district in 2020, that's a quarter of the state, that changed about 50 votes. I have seen a lot of legislative race recounts, and even when somebody is leading by only 10 or 20 votes, it just doesn't change. So it's very unlikely that there are enough votes out there for Todd Helber to overcome this. Rob Sand, he got about 600,000 votes. That was more than about 118,000 more than Deirdre DeGeer. Todd Helber, with spending almost no money, almost was able to beat him. I mean, it's clear that if the Republican Party had spent any money at all, any significant money raising Todd Halber's profile, we would probably be looking at a different outcome. But Rob Sand, the combination of he ran a very aggressive campaign, spending more than $1 million on television and digital advertising, traveling all over the state. He visited the 99 counties every year, had lots of town meetings, and all of those things helped him survive this wave just barely.
Yep. And for Agriculture Secretary, no need to go into depth here. Republican incumbent Mike Naig, seeking his second term, easily dispatched Democrat John Norwood 61-39%.
Yeah, this was another race where John Norwood just never raised enough money, similar to the Secretary of State race. I mean, he just never was able to get his name out there. He traveled the state and did a lot of events, but he just didn't have a significant even digital advertising, let alone radio and TV.
The gun rights amendment that was on the statewide ballot easily won 65-35% in spite of protests before the election by the Des Moines Register, which has actually had, of course, diminished impact over the previous years here because its circulation is down. But this won easily by 30 points.
Yes, there were only two counties, Johnson County, that's Iowa City, and Story County, right, our listening area. Those were the only two counties that voted no on that gun amendment. There just wasn't a well-funded campaign against it. I think that there, when people are looking at that on the ballot, the right to keep and bear arms is fundamental in the Iowa Constitution. A lot of people looked at that and thought, well, that's something that I support. And the legal jargon of the any and all restrictions of this right shall be subject to strict scrutiny, most people don't understand what that means. So I expect that we'll probably see some litigation in the coming years challenging the various restrictions, for instance, on firearms ownership by people with felony convictions or people with domestic violence protection orders. And then Iowans might become more aware. But I don't think that there was a lot of awareness of the implications of this amendment.
And two state Supreme Court justices, two courts of appeals justices, along with 61 associate and district judges around the state, they all received enough votes, retention votes in the election to keep their jobs.
They did. It wasn't as commanding a margin as what we've usually seen, considering that nobody spent any money against the Iowa Supreme Court justices. Their overall margins of victory were not hugely impressive, but on the other hand, it also wasn't that close. There's a pretty big drop-off for those races. A lot of people who are voting down the front side of the ballot didn't turn their ballots over and vote on the other side. So they end up winning with a pretty significant margin, but without necessarily having as many votes as, for instance, the Kim Reynolds got.
All right. And in the Iowa State Senate, 34 of the 50 Senate seats were up for election last Tuesday night. Now, right now, the GOP has a 32-18 lead in the Senate. They want it to get at least two more seats to keep Democrats from killing some of Governor Reynolds' appointments. Well, they got them.
They got them. It looks like the Iowa Senate is going to be 34 Republicans and 16 Democrats. I don't think any of the Senate races this year were recount close. And it seemed, I believe that all of the candidates have conceded in those races. So they'll need to have everybody present. And it's not that uncommon for one or two legislators to be absent on any given day. But if they can organize things to make sure that their entire caucus is present when they vote for confirmations, they should be able to clear everybody the governor nominates for every position.
And perhaps there were many interesting state Senate races, but maybe the most interesting was Senate District 14. That's Van Meter, Adel, Waukee, plus parts of Clive and West Des Moines. It's the most expensive state Senate race this year. And it had two incumbents running, Senator Bertrand Garriott, the Democrat, State Senate President Jake Chapman, the Republican, and the Democrat won.
Yes, Sarah Trone-Garriott worked really hard. I think the two most important factors in this race were that, first of all, she just outworked Jake Chapman. She was out there knocking thousands of doors herself. She also had some volunteers doing it, but she was out almost every weekend starting last December. And Jake Chapman just wasn't doing a lot of direct voter contact. He had some paid canvassers, but that's not the same as the candidate showing up on the doorstep. I also think that it's very important that this was a suburban district, and around in suburbs, all over the country, Democrats have been performing better in recent years than they did previously. And that's been true in Iowa as well. It hasn't translated into statewide victories because Iowa doesn't have a very large percentage of the population living in suburban areas. But the few bright spots in legislative races that Democrats were pointing to last week were all in the suburbs.
And we should point out that as a result of Jake Chapman's loss, he was the president of the Senate, the GOP last week chose Senator Amy Sinclair of Ellerton as the new president going forward.
Yes, and she is the most senior woman to hold a position in the Iowa Senate since Pam Yoakum for the Democrats. She held that Senate president. It sounds like it should be the leader. It's actually the second ranking position in the majority caucus. The majority leader is the top. But the Senate president, there have been a few women prior to Amy Sinclair, but the most recent was Pam Yoakum through the 2016 legislative session.
And in the Iowa House, all 100 state House seats were on the ballot last Tuesday night. So the Republicans already held a 60-40 edge in the House. Well, going forward, as a result of last Tuesday night, it's going to be bigger.
Yes. We don't know how much bigger because at least three of these races are going to recounts, possibly more. There's an administrative recount happening. There was an issue with Scott County ballots, and depending on where some of those uncounted absentee ballots were, that could affect a couple of the races out there. But it is looking like the Republicans will end up with 63 or 64 seats, and the Democrats 36 or 37 seats. So that would be the lowest either party has been in the Iowa House for, I think, decades. The Democrats were down 60-40 after the 2010 election, but you have to go back pretty far to find a majority larger than that.
And focusing just on the most expensive House race last week, House District 28, it was an open seat, Adele Van Meter, parts of West Des Moines. We had two very well-known people, Democrat Sonia Heitschusen, former WHO TV anchor, Republican David Young, former Iowa congressman, and it turns out David Young is a winner.
He was. He didn't win by that much. I mean, considering that they did, the Republicans outspent the Democrats by quite a lot in that race. And his winning margin was impressive. I mean, it wasn't overwhelming. So he won by not quite 1,000 votes. And I almost thought that that one maybe wouldn't be that close, given how high his name ID was from having served in Congress. But again, the Republicans are facing some headwinds in the suburbs in Iowa, as in other parts of the country.
So what does it all mean? Well, we're going to get into that in the second half hour of this broadcast. Yes, we're on a full hour tonight, and we appreciate the demand for the full hour. But first, we want to turn it over to Mike Murphy, the station manager of KHOI, who's back with another message about really how you can help support this radio station. Meanwhile, Laura and I will take a little breath here and figure out where we're going next. Mike, it's all yours.
You guys deserve to take a breath.
Okay. So, Laura, are you taking a breath?
Breathe away.
Take a breath.
Breathe them if you got them. All right. Well, you know, in our so-called 500-channel universe, we're swamped with so much information, we can't deal with it all. Adding to the confusion and the stress is the fact that much of what we see and hear is balderdash, outright lies to promote a particular point of view, or maybe an occasional pillow. Our commitment at KHOI is to cut through the clutter and focus on verifiable facts so you can come to your own conclusions. You can rely on the news and information programs we air every day on KHOI. It starts with Local Talk, our locally produced show that covers the important and essential events in central Iowa every weekday morning. And there's Letters in Politics, looking at the burning political issues facing the nation. Democracy Now! Is a national and international news magazine featuring cutting-edge thinkers. And, of course, this program we're listening to right now, Capital Week, with Dennis and Laura, providing us with such an in-depth take on statewide political news and analysis only available on community radio here, KHOI in central Iowa. You can rely on KHOI to broadcast real news, factually reliable information, but it takes your financial support to continue these and other factual programs. Please become a member of KHOI. Our basic memberships are just $60 a year. To join, you can call 515-292-2878 and press 0 for the reception. If no one answers, leave a voicemail. Or you can contribute online at khoifm.org by touching that yellow Become a Member donor button on the left-hand side. No matter how you choose to give your support, it will be received with gratitude, and you can feel great about supporting real, verifiable news. Just the facts. And I'm going to turn it back over to this really reliable news program we're hearing now, Capital Week, with Laura and Dennis.
Mike, thank you. I'm Dennis Hart with Laura Bellin. We are here, in case you're listening to us for the first time, every Monday night live at 7 o'clock. And there's a replay on Wednesday at noon. And we provide you with in-depth coverage of what's going on in Iowa politics week in, week out. We've done it for a couple of years now. We're going to come back for the third year next year and hopefully many more years. And Laura, it's always a pleasure working with you, and has been. And I'm looking forward to it, by the way, over the next however many years we do this thing.
Yes, I enjoy the show, and people can find past editions by going to khoifm.org and looking under the talk programs and clicking on Capital Week. Mike uploads the audio files, and so it's easy for people to listen to. There just isn't anything else in Iowa. There are a few political podcasts, but I don't think anybody consistently goes as in-depth as we do every week.
And we also occasionally provide an education in terms of phrases like kabuki theater. That was the big phrase earlier in the year. And also predictions about the bottle law, the Iowa bottle law. As I recall, I was pretty good on that one over the years. Laura was a little bit lax on that. All right, let's talk about what happened last week. Now, we're going to analyze all of this. First off, voters did turn out last week. More than 1.2 million Iowans voted in the midterm. But it was less than the 2018 midterm.
Yes, it was substantially less. I mean, it was higher turnout than 2010 and 2014. Those were notoriously fairly low turnout midterms across the country. And in 2018, there was a big surge. It was very high on both sides. The Democratic and Republican turnout was very high. And even the turnout of unaffiliated voters, while not as high as partisans, it was still a lot higher than it had been in the previous midterms. Now, the Secretary of State's office hasn't issued what's called the statewide statistical report that breaks down the turnout by age group and by gender and by party affiliation. And I'm going to be looking closely because, again, down about 100,000 people from 2018, that is a significant drop. And I suspect that we're going to see that it wasn't evenly spread across Democrats and Republicans and independents.
Absentee voting was down this year, and some people are already writing that, oh, it's because of the restrictions that Republicans put on voting, cutting down the number of absentee voting days, forcing absentee ballots to be in by 8 o'clock on election night. Too early to know that, but what do you think about that?
Well, I noticed that the early voting was way down. It was down more for Republicans than for Democrats. And so, of course, the big question was, is that are more people just planning to vote on Election Day, or are there just more people not planning to vote at all? And it looks like it was a little bit of both. I mean, certainly there were people who had voted early in the past who voted on November 8th. But as we were just discussing, the overall turnout was quite a bit down. So that when that statewide report comes out in January, that also breaks everything down by Election Day turnout and early turnout. And so I'm going to be looking closely to see what the trends were. I think that just when you have 20 days to vote early versus it used to be 40, not too many years ago, and even in 2018, it was 29 days, that's just less time for people to get those ballots in. I also have not seen any data yet. I'm going to be requesting from all of the county auditors the information about the absentee ballots that arrived too late to be counted. Remember, this is the first general election where in Iowa, the absentee ballot had to arrive by 8 p.m. last Tuesday, regardless of postmark. And I'm going to be curious to see how many people tried to send their ballot in and just didn't get it in on time.
One of the things that is a surety about last Tuesday night's election is that state Republicans, Iowa Republicans at the top of the ballot, won in all but a handful of counties. It was a deep victory statewide for Republicans, and Democrats are limited to just a few counties right now.
Yes, and that's been a trend over the past decade. So when Tom Vilsack was elected governor, he carried, I think, 25 or 30 counties. When Chet Culver was elected in 2006, he also carried about the same number of counties. Barack Obama carried more than 30 counties in 2008. So there used to be a fair number of small and medium-sized counties that would sometimes support Democratic candidates. But this has really changed. So when Hillary Clinton lost Iowa in 2016, she carried only 6 of the 99 counties. It was the same for Joe Biden, only 6 of the 99 counties. Fred Hubble, I believe, won 9 or 10 out of the 99 counties. So it's just right now, the Democratic Party is losing votes in places where they used to be competitive. And that, I think, is the biggest problem for the party going forward. It's not those deep red rural counties so much as those medium-sized counties that used to be at least competitive, if not Democratic-leaning.
We've already talked about how Iowa counties near the Mississippi River continue trending for the Republicans. No need to go over that again. But now the question is, how long were Governor Reynolds' coattails? Did she lead Republicans to victory? And the answer is they were long coattails.
Yes. I mean, it's hard to know how much was that race and how much was other factors. But the fact that the governor's race was not perceived to be competitive, I do think that that depressed Democratic turnout. I think it hurt Democrats in the down ballot races, including in the state legislative races. There were some competitive state legislative districts in those eastern Iowa counties, and the Republicans almost ran the table on those. Now, it's hard to attribute that just to Reynolds because the Iowa House and Senate Republicans were also outspending Democrats in almost all of those races. But I do think that, generally speaking, it was very helpful for their whole ticket to have a governor's race that wasn't very competitive.
So let's bring it down home here. What does the red wave in Iowa last week mean for the future of abortion in the state?
Well, the legislative leaders are still being a little bit coy about whether they plan to pass a new law banning most abortions. Right now, the Iowa courts are considering the governor's request to reinstate that 2018 abortion ban. This is a law that would ban almost all abortions after about 6 weeks of pregnancy when a fetal cardiac activity can be detected. And that will take quite a while. So the governor has said this is where her focus is, not on passing new legislation, but the new legislature is going to convene in January, and they'll probably be done with their work by late April or early May. And it's very unlikely that the Iowa Supreme Court will have ruled by that time on whether to reinstate this 2018 law. So I'm a little skeptical that the legislature is just going to sit back for the entire next year's session and not do anything about a new law on abortion. It's also not clear what they're planning to do on a constitutional amendment. I think that the success of the pro-gun constitutional amendment will make it more likely that Republican legislators will push ahead and try to pass a constitutional amendment saying there's no right to an abortion in the state constitution. However, what happened in Kansas in August, where a very similar referendum went down to defeat, might deter them from taking that step.
What does the red wave last week mean for the future of the Democratic First in the Nation caucuses? Are they just about to go bye-bye, baby?
I think so. I think that they were doomed probably even before this election. And I think that's why the Democratic National Committee delayed the decision on the calendar. But I think there's a perception that it's helpful to the party to have early campaigning for president in states that are going to be competitive in the general election. And when most of the country doesn't look like it was a red wave, and yet Iowa had a red wave, it is harder for people in the Democratic National Committee to justify why should we have our candidates come and campaign and appeal to Iowa Democrats when this is just not a state that's going to even be on the board. And people forget that Iowa was a very competitive swing state in presidential elections from the 1980s through Barack Obama's reelection. So it was really only in the 2016 election that things in Iowa started to diverging. So I think that the DNC is going to be looking at other states, possibly Wisconsin, possibly Michigan, states that are very, very close, where it looks like presidential candidates pounding the pavement might have an impact in November.
And the Democratic National Committee is scheduled to meet December 1st through 3rd to decide that.
Yes, and we'll be on top of it. I just think Iowa, you know, they made the strongest case they could, but I think even before this election, it was going to be very difficult for Iowa to maintain its place. And then you just wonder what is going to happen, because state law says that we have caucuses before New Hampshire's primary, and the Republicans aren't going to change their calendar. So it could be that the Democrats end up holding some kind of caucus that nobody comes and campaigns for.
Oh, won't that be fun? Okay, one of the side stories last week is that libertarians, as a result of the election, will qualify again for major party status in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in the way state law works, a political party needs to get at least 2% of the vote, either in the election for president or in the election for governor, to have a status of a major party. So the Libertarians gained that in 2016 when their presidential nominee got almost 4% of the vote. And then they lost it in 2018 when their nominee for governor fell short of that 2% margin. So they didn't nominate very many candidates for offices this year. They were really focused on that governor's race. I think it helped Rick Stewart that the overall race between Kim Reynolds and Deirdre Dejere wasn't that competitive. And he did manage to get 2.4% of the vote. So what that's going to mean is in the next election cycle, it's going to be a lot easier for libertarians to nominate candidates and get them on the ballot for all kinds of offices. So I expect to see much closer to a full slate of candidates running for the federal offices, so the U.S. House districts, and by the time of the next midterms, possibly more libertarians on the ballot for state offices as well.
And of course, Rick Stewart was the one who asked Democrats to send him a bundle of hundies during his campaign. That meant $100 bills. Don't know how many he got. I know I didn't get any. All right, let's talk about...
Well, maybe Cindy Acme should have sent him some, because I think it would have helped. It would have helped her a lot to have a libertarian on the ballot. But that's an example of how, I mean, who knows what the political environment's going to be in 2024. But if the Democrats nominate either Cindy Acme or somebody else to really go hard to win back that third district, having a libertarian on the ballot could be very impactful.
And briefly, before we take another break here, the Republican agenda, as a result of the election in the legislature last week, Their agenda is likely to see a lot smoother sailing next year. The governor wants a bold conservative agenda, including building on tax cuts, parental choice policies. She's going to be able to get it, probably.
Probably. Although I will tell you, this fall, I have talked to people about the Iowa House. There still are quite a few Iowa House Republicans who do not support her school voucher bill. So I don't know if they're going to have to adjust the proposal. Now, it could be that with a majority that's larger, 63 or 64 seats, it could be that they have the votes to get that through. Certainly in the Senate, they've already shown that they have the votes to get that through. But I just don't know. In the House, I still hear rumblings that they might be opposed to that. I mean, a lot of the rural superintendents and the rural school boards are very concerned about what that would do. And that is where the resistance came, these rural Republican-held districts. And nothing has changed on the ground in terms of how that voucher plan would affect those school districts. So that's one area. Now, tax cuts, yes, I definitely think the governor will probably get pretty much what she wants there.
All right, it's 15 before the hour, and this is KHOI Radio's Capital Week. Laura Bell and I here every week at this time to talk politics Iowa style. We still have a little bit more to go, but first, I want to bring back one more time station manager Mike Murphy. He has a message about how you can help support this radio station. Mike, that is your cue.
Yes, that's right, Dennis. This is KHOI's Fall Fun Drive, and we're asking you, as a KHOI listener, to do your part to keep your community radio on the air by becoming a member or renewing your membership or increasing your contribution to our station. Membership start at $60. Friend of KHOI contribute $250 a year. Or you could become a sustaining member for as little as $5 a month deducted from your bank account. So, sign up today. How do you do that? Three simple, quick possibilities. Call 515-292-2878 and press 0 for the receptionist. And if no one answers, leave a voicemail. Or go to the website, khoifm.org, and click the yellow Become a Member Donor button. Or send a check to KHOI 622 Douglas Avenue, Ames, Iowa, 50010. Support programs like Capital Week and all the other fine programs we have on this station. Please support it. Contribute now. And thank you. Back to you.
There, I had to turn on my mic. Thank you very much, Mike. All right, we have a few more minutes. Let's talk about what changes in the legislature will result from the election. Laura, first, in terms of women in the state Senate and House, how does it stack up next session?
So we have, for the third cycle in a row, a record number of women elected to the Iowa Senate. So it has been, the past 2 years, there have been 12 of the 50 senators were women. It looks like it's going to be 15 now. That's 8 Democrats and 7 Republicans. And that's a lot more. Just even 5 or 6 years ago, there was only a woman in the entire Republican Senate caucus. So both parties have been nominating and electing more women to offices. And as we mentioned earlier, Amy Sinclair is going to rise to that second most senior position in the Iowa Senate.
In terms of racial and ethnic diversity, it was just 4 years ago that 4 Black representatives in the 100-member House were the only people of color in the state legislature. Well, that's going to change in the incoming legislature because it's going to have at least a dozen lawmakers whose race or ethnicity are going to make the state house a lot more diverse.
Yes, I realize I forgot to mention the state house. The high water mark for women in the state house, which has 100 members, was after the 2018 election when there were 34 women. So it is dropping down. Again, there are a few races subject to recounts, probably going to be 29 or 30 out of the 100 who will be women, and none holding those top senior positions. But yes, racial diversity. So the record for, there were 6 Black members of the Iowa House in 2009, 2010, and then it dropped down to 5, and then it dropped down to 4, and it has been steadily increasing. So now, for the first time now, we are going to have 6 Black members of the Iowa House, and Isaiah Knox was elected to the Iowa Senate. He is going to be only the second Black state senator ever to serve in Iowa, the first in more than 30 years. And also in the Iowa House now, we will have two Latino members, one Democrat and one Republican, also two Asian American members, again, one Democrat and one Republican. And before 2020, there had never been a Latino elected to the Iowa legislature at all. And there had only been one Asian American ever to serve in the Iowa legislature, and that was Swati Dandekar, who stepped down in 2011. So there is really quite a lot more racial and ethnic diversity now in the incoming body.
And there's also going to be LGBTQ representation there.
Yes. There have been, up to now, Matt McCoy has been the only out gay member of the Iowa Senate. He stepped down in 2018 to run for Polk County Supervisor instead. So since then, the Iowa Senate has not had an LGBTQ member. That is changing because State Representative Liz Bennett of Cedar Rapids area, who identifies as queer, she was elected to fill that Iowa Senate seat. And in the State House, where Liz Bennett has for the past several years been the only LGBTQ member, also Eleanor Levin was elected from one of the Iowa City districts. And so there is going to be a representation there.
And we're also going to have a significant amount of religious diversity in the legislature.
Yes, yeah, so this was unusual for Iowa. So Akayo Abdul-Samad, who is the longest serving Black legislator, he represents a district in Des Moines. He is Muslim. And since 2014, he has been the only Muslim. There used to be a Bosnian Muslim member from the Waterloo area. But for the last 8 years, Akayo Abdul-Samad has been the only Iowa legislator who is affiliated with a faith tradition other than Christianity. So he was reelected. Megan Srinivas is the new Asian American Democratic member. She is the youngest woman of color ever elected in Iowa, and she is Hindu. Also, there are three Jewish legislators now, Eleanor Levin, who I mentioned from the Iowa City area, Adam Zabner, also from the Iowa City area and in the state Senate. Janice Weiner won that open Senate seat in the Iowa City area. And they are going to be the first Jewish people to serve in the Iowa legislature since Ralph Rosenberg, who people might remember in the listening audience because he represented the Ames area for a number of years in the 80s and the early 1990s.
And Iowans with disabilities are also potentially, it's not certain yet, but potentially going to have representation.
Yes, Josh Turek, this is a closely watched race. He is a Paralympian, four-time Paralympian, three-time medalist in wheelchair basketball. He played wheelchair basketball professionally in Europe. He came back to the Council Bluffs area where he grew up. He is very active. His day job is involved with helping people access equipment, adaptive equipment for people with disabilities. And he also volunteers for an organization that creates sports opportunities for children with disabilities. And he's in a very tight race. This is the closest legislative race of this cycle. He is in unofficial results, leading by 7 votes. I don't know. Again, we don't have late arriving absentee ballots anymore. There may still be some provisional ballots that are disputed, but that should be canvassed and there will be a recount in that race. I have seen races as close as 10 votes before and that a recount didn't change, but you just never know. And there have been other legislators who had a disability, but Josh Turek is the only person who is really publicly an advocate for people with disabilities who is potentially going to serve in the Iowa House.
So that's about as deep a dive as you're going to hear anywhere, radio or television, on what just happened last week. Now let's sum this all up in our last 3 minutes or so here, Laura. Democrats are in the wilderness in Iowa. It's been a red wave. Where do they go next? And where can they go next?
Well, it's going to be really tough because by the next midterm election, I mean, the Republican candidates are going to be incumbents. And as I mentioned, it's not easy to beat an incumbent. Rob Sand, assuming he remains victorious in that state auditor's race, I think that's going to be very important. People will be looking to him as a possible future candidate for governor. But in any case, just holding the state auditor's office, he will be in a position to potentially hold state government accountable. That is the main job of the auditor's office, is to look at the accounts of state and local government agencies. And so that is one reason why Governor Reynolds earlier this year said that she wanted a new state auditor. But it's going to be really tough. It's hard to see a pathway for Democrats to get back toward even close to a legislative majority because they're not even competitive in a lot of legislative areas where they used to hold the seats for decades. So again, these towns, Fort Dodge, Ottumwa, Newton, Clinton, Burlington, Keokuk, these are all towns that were long represented by Democrats that now are represented by Republicans in both the Iowa House and the Iowa Senate. And Democrats are going to have to figure out a way to crack that code if they can make any inroads. But it's going to be difficult. It's hard when you're in the minority in the legislature. You don't naturally get as much media coverage of your activities, and it's just hard to get a message out.
And in the last minute or so, Governor Reynolds, who is now clearly the leader of the party, she was even mentioned in the Wall Street Journal this past week as being a potential vice presidential consideration. Now, what do you think her future is?
You know, I hear a lot of speculation about that. I just don't really see it happening. I think that she enjoys being governor, and I expect her to keep running for reelection as governor as long as she can. But I certainly hear people talking about her as a possible vice presidential candidate. And if the Arizona governor's race goes the way it looks like it's going, with Carrie Lake, the Republican, not winning, it could. So that would presumably take her out of contention as the running mate. I just don't know. It's very possible that Kim Reynolds could be on that short list. I just think she's going to stay in Iowa.
You and I have been on the air a lot on KHOI in the last week or so, hour-long specials, election night. Here we are the week after the election. What are you looking for this week? Is there any news that's going to be made this week and the week after the election?
Well, I'm looking for news to see if there are any changes in the Reynolds administration, any state government agency changes. I'm going to be looking closely again at some of the county level results and trying to see what's happening in the legislature. Maybe if anybody tips their hand about how things are going to go with abortion. Again, sometime in the next 45 to 60 days, we're probably going to get a ruling from the lower court on reinstating that abortion ban law from 2018. So I'm going to be following that closely. And I just have some other stories that are unrelated to the elections that I'm going to be looking at.
Laura, it is always a pleasure working with you, has been all these years, a couple of years. You have a great week and see you next Monday night.
Thank you. Looking forward to it.
All right. We are out of time finally for this special edition of Capital Week. You have been listening, yes, to KHOI Radio's Capital Week. A reminder that the views and opinions expressed here did not necessarily reflect the opinions of KHOI or its staff. Laura and I will indeed be back next week in this same time slot, when we'll talk about everything interesting, important, or entertaining about politics, Iowa style. We hope you can join us. Until then, thank you so much for the privilege of your time. We know you have many things to do, many other sources of information. We appreciate your spending your time, your attention span with us. We do value it every week, trust me. Between now and next time, whenever it is for you, we hope you will have a safe, healthy, and very happy week.